Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Coming up on today's program, you'll hear some music from one of our upcoming guests at the WISO Community Concert, taking place on September 10th at Riverscape Metro Park. And later in the program, Bill Felker has this week's Poor Will's Almanac. Up first, this summer, WISO has brought you a series of stories of Ohioans living with disabilities. Today, in our final installment of that series, we'll meet Heather Reese.
Hi, Paul.
Do you mind if I sort of follow you around today?
Sure. Let me find by me.
Okay.
Sorry, guys. You got to do this.
Follow around. Do your job.
40-year-old Heather has Down syndrome, a heart defect called MR, and a visual impairment. In this story, Heather takes us on a tour of United Rehabilitation Services in Dayton, where she works, and we'll meet Heather's mom, Sue Reese, who also works at URS.
Okay, this is Sheldon. He's a nice guy. He's in a wheelchair.
Heather is very social. She doesn't know a stranger. She loves coming to URS. I mean, this is her life, and that's what she'll tell you. This is my life.
I love it here. This is the best job I've ever had.
She works in the cafeteria helping others. She's very caring and loving.
So I'll go ahead and take you to my vacational room.
It was hard for me in the very beginning because my husband at the time was working for Special Olympics. And we had been exposed to children with Down syndrome and other children that were diagnosed with MR. But we never dreamed of that we would have a child with any disabilities. And it was hard at first, but once we saw Heather and we had her, I mean, we fell in love with her instantly, and she's just achieved so much.
I heard you just went on vacation, right?
Yeah. Actually, I'll let you know that I travel a lot, and I love it on the way. I just want to keep going. So this is going to be the greatest day of my entire life. Be on the radio is really awesome and exciting.
We had her in just regular, like a kindergarten class, but it was kind of sad because we had parents that fought us because they didn't want Heather, because she was handicapped, to be in a, quote, normal kindergarten setting.
All right, this is the vacation room. Guys, this is April from the radio station.
Radio.
So what radio station? WYSO.
I think it was kind of a struggle until Heather got into middle school. And then from middle school on, everybody just seemed to be willing to accept her for who she was. And Heather was very outgoing. I mean, she was friendly. She loves everybody. So I think as she got older, it got better.
Wow. Mom, look who's here.
Hi. Oh, you are here. Okay.
Going on a tour.
Okay,
I'm doing so well.
Okay, you're doing a tour?
Yes.
Okay, tour, and then are you working in the kitchen?
Yeah, I work in the cafeteria.
Okay.
So I help out with staff and the lunches and stuff like that.
Yeah, Heather was introducing me to everybody.
Oh, yes. So.
Okay, have fun.
So I got more people.
All right, I'm going to take you downhill.
Okay.
We used to talk about her being handicapped, and she would say, "No, Mom, I'm not handicapped." And even when she was younger, we used to talk about her having Down syndrome, and she would deny it. Because there was a show years ago that was on TV, and it was about a Down syndrome boy. And we all enjoyed watching it. But Heather, for some reason, would not watch it. She would not. And she even met this actor at Special Olympics. But she always denied at first that she had Down syndrome. And I'll never forget, years ago, my daughter was going to the University of Toledo. And we took her and her roommate out to dinner. And we went to the Olive Garden. And it was funny, we couldn't find a place to park. So my daughter says, "Mom, just park in the handicap spot because Heather's handicapped." And Heather looked at her and she says, "Missy, I am not handicapped. I'm over 21. I'm not handicapped." But now if you talk to her, she will tell you that she has Down syndrome. She's legally blind, and she has had heart issues. So I think now she's accepted it. But before, because she did so much, she thought she was just as normal as you or I.
Yeah. And these two are roommates.
Yeah. We live in the same room home.
Yeah. Nice to meet y'all.
I will take you down here real quick.
Well, the only thing that worries me is, like I said, Heather is very social. She doesn't know a stranger. So, you know, that's just kind of one of my fears. But again, you know, as she grows, and we've talked about her, you know, being in a maybe a group home situation, she just tells me, Mom, I'm not ready. Let's not talk about it right now. So hopefully in the future, you know, it might be easier for us and her to make that decision.
Okay, this is the way out.
All right, see you later, Heather.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
All right.
What are your dreams for the future?
My future is living in my own apartment. Someday I want to marry my boyfriend and spend with my life with him forever to keep both of you from now on. What are your dreams for me?
I think my dreams for you are, the first one would be to stay healthy and to be very happy in life. I know someday you would like to have your own apartment and be more independent. Your dad and I would both like that for you. We just want your future to be really anything that you want it to be.
You've been listening to an interview with Heather and Sue Reese. Heather and Sue both work at United Rehabilitation Services in Dayton. To learn more about our series, visit us at wyso.org. Relatives of a renowned 19th century artist are calling for one of his most famous statues to be taken down. The Confederate monument has stood in Arlington National Cemetery for more than 100 years. But after the racially charged deadly violence in Charlottesville earlier this month, family members from around the world, including one in Yellow Springs, want it removed from Arlington for good. The family's request adds more fuel to the already heated debate over what to do with the country's Confederate monuments. WISO's Jess Mador has more.
The 32-foot-tall statue is among a handful of Civil War monuments at Arlington National Cemetery. Its creator had long Southern roots and a colorful biography.
Moses Jacob Ezekiel was the first Jew to go to the VMI, the Virginia Military Institute. He was a soldier in the Confederate Army.
That's Judith Ezekiel in her Yellow Springs living room. Ezekiel says she's proud of her relatives' many artistic achievements. His other works include a statue of Thomas Jefferson at the University of Virginia. But she says events in Charlottesville sparked a family debate over what to do about Ezekiel's Arlington Monument. The 1914 statue depicts a woman wearing a crown of olive leaves. She's described on the Arlington National Cemetery website as representing the South. Underneath her is a series of other figures, including Confederate soldiers.
And we see two black figures. One was apparently a servant to a soldier, and the other is the black quote-unquote mammy. That message is really toxic.
Ezekiel is a visiting professor of women's studies and African-American studies at Wright State University. She says the statue's images justify slavery. She says some relatives wanted to leave the statue where it is. Others wanted to destroy it.
In the end, we compromised and we just said, put it in a museum where it's contextualized, where its history is explained.
They published a letter in the Washington Post calling for Ezekiel's Confederate monument to be taken down.
Does it matter that we're family members or not? And some people would say it doesn't. But if it can attract attention and if it can show that even though this cousin of mine and the importance of him culturally is significant and I would like to see it preserved, it's not worth maintaining racist imagery.
But not everyone agrees Confederate monuments need to come down. That was the message at a recent protest in Franklin in Warren County. Holding a large Confederate flag, 41-year-old Robert L. Fisher Jr. says it's important to preserve Confederate monuments even when they may be seen as offensive by others.
How are you going to teach our kids when we no longer have none of our monuments for the history? They're erasing our history right beneath our feet. No one's history should be taken from them, no matter what it is.
University of Cincinnati history professor Christopher Phillips points out many people don't realize the majority of the country's Confederate monuments were actually erected decades after the end of the Civil War. Still, he says, Confederate monuments hold a powerful place in American history and the battle over African Americans' civil rights.
Some of the grandest Confederate monuments put up during the 1920s, it's also the era when the Ku Klux Klan was ascendant.
Phillips says the Trump administration's populist rhetoric is contributing to an increase in racial unrest, but toppling Confederate monuments alone won't be enough.
The worst way to approach this is to simply remove them without thinking about the broader implications, and that is that they can be used as teaching tools, which we desperately need on this subject.
Phillips says more education about the Civil War and Confederate symbols will help heal the cultural divide, but change, he says, is slow. For WYSO, I'm Jess Mador.
And just last year, Ohio replaced one of two statues representing the state in Congress Statuary Hall because of its subject's views on slavery. The statue of Governor William Allen, who served from 1874 to 1876, was replaced with one of Thomas Edison. But what happened to Allen's statue? That question is especially relevant now that monuments to historical people whose views are now considered controversial have been the focus of debate and even vandalism. State House correspondent Joe Ingles reports.
The statue of Democratic former Governor William Allen is in Chillicothe, the city he called home. Ross County Historical Society Director Tom Kuhn says Allen's marble likeness has been housed in the Ross County Historical Society since its removal from Statuary Hall last fall.
Well, our job is to preserve and interpret history, and history comes in all shapes and sizes, including this 12,000-pound white marble statue. And so it's an artifact now. It's been taken down from the public square, from its position of veneration, and it's now here as an historical artifact and a piece of art.
Like many historic statues, this one lost favor over time. Kuhn says many Ohioans who saw it in Washington, D.C. didn't know who this two-year governor was and wondered why he was chosen to represent the Buckeye State. And then there was the issue of slavery.
His positions, his outspoken positions, represented the thoughts of many in his political party at the time. And I think it's important for people to understand, you know, the history of that alone. He was anti-war, or he was known as a Northern Peace Democrat. And he's also believed that the Civil War was not the proper way to settle the issue of slavery, given all of the hundreds of thousands of casualties that were suffered during the war.
Chillicothe, Ohio's first capital city, is full of history and monuments. City leaders have grappled with how to keep the history without, in any way, glorifying the negative aspects of it. Democrat Luke Feeney is the city's mayor.
Well, I think that, you know, in this situation, we might be a year or two ahead on this statue of history and what's been happening recently. I think the vote to remove it from Washington, D.C., bring it back home, I think did that. It took it from being if you want to call it hero worship, to a place where it is in a museum and it's respectfully placed there, not necessarily in the center of the city or in a park or something like that.
Earlier this week, the statue of a Confederate soldier in Camp Chase, a Civil War era cemetery in Columbus, was vandalized. Other historical statues and paintings have been removed from public spaces by cities during the past month. And some cities have removed statues amid protests and threats, such as in Warren County, when leaders recently took down a Robert E. Lee monument. The leader of the Ohio History Connection, Bert Logan, says there are not many Confederate monuments in the state. And he says when there are, like the marker noting the Confederate attack in eastern and southern Ohio known as Morgan's Raid, the focus has been to explain the resistance. Still, that monument of Morgan at Salt Fork State Park Lodge in Zanesville was removed by the Ohio Department of Natural Resources and is now in safekeeping. Bert Logan says his group stays out of the decisions about locally owned monuments.
We don't see our role so much as trying to prescribe how local organizations choose to protect, to interpret. We encourage local organizations, local communities to do that, and we work with them in any way we can. But again, the final decision rests at the local level.
Even some monuments on private properties, such as one in Worthington that designated a Confederate general's home, have been removed. Still, it doesn't appear the monumental debate over statues will be over anytime soon. Joe Ingles at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
In other recent state news, state lawmakers are gearing up for another round in the fight over renewable energy mandates. While opponents say they're a financial burden, supporters say they help cut down on air pollution, which then improves respiratory health. State House correspondent Andy Chow visited a part of Ohio where the risk for experiencing breathing problems is one of the highest in the country.
Just that clickety-clack of buttons on an Xbox controller can be heard in Dalton Ofton Camp's living room.
Why are you reading their bios right now?
Along with the 15-year-old chatting with other gamers in his headset. It's a sunny day, and not too hot for August. But Dalton makes sure all the windows are shut, the doors are closed, and the air conditioner is running. That's because outside of Dalton's house, it's also a hazy, humid day as cars and trucks pass by the neighborhood, which sits along I-77 just south of Akron. This is the kind of day that can be dangerous for kids like Dalton, who have asthma. His mother, Clara Ofton Camp, can relate. She's lived with the same respiratory illness for 54 years, making sure to teach Dalton all the tips he needs to know to stay safe.
You know what you can do and can't do. You just learn to adjust to it. You don't let it control your life.
But Clara's still a mother, and like many parents, she plans for the worst-case scenario.
If I'm going to get the phone call from school that he was in gym, he went into full alert, he's on his way to emergency room, or he's passed out because he couldn't breathe.
The Ofton Camp family is not alone. Several studies show people living in the 44301 zip code, along with other neighborhoods in Akron, Canton, and Cleveland, are at an increased risk of respiratory problems because of the higher levels of air pollution.
It's often described as being like a fish out of water.
Dr. Shumita Khatri specializes in respiratory illnesses at the Cleveland Clinic. She says there's no question that people in this part of the state have a harder time breathing because of the higher volume of particulate matter. There are more than 2 million people who live in Cuyahoga, Summit, and Stark counties, and about 10% of those people, kids and adults, have asthma.
We are a function of who we are, how we're made up genetically, and also the environment that we're in. And so although to some degree everyone is affected by air pollution from a health standpoint, there are also people who are especially sensitive and susceptible.
Khatri is backed by studies from the New England Journal of Medicine and the American Lung Association, which had the Cleveland-Akron-Canton region in the top 10 for people most at risk to particle pollution year-round. She attributes that to the large volume of vehicles, heavy traffic stagnation, and manufacturing plants. The Columbus and Cincinnati regions both received passing grades for annual particle pollution. In response to the problem, mostly Democratic and some Republican state lawmakers have advocated for stronger support for renewable energy and clean vehicles. But Greg Lawson with the Buckeye Institute, a conservative think tank, argues that the region's respiratory struggles shouldn't just be tied to air pollution, but other factors as well, such as poverty.
You have situations where the upkeep is not as good. You may have sewage issues. You may have mold issues. As an asthmatic, I can tell you mold and things like that can be absolutely devastating.
He always has an inhaler with him, so we always have like three or four.
Back in Akron, Clara Ofton Camp commends the steps local industrial plants have taken to clean their operations. And while studies have shown that the air in Clara Ofton Camp's region makes it harder to breathe, this is the neighborhood she grew up in, and she refuses to let pollution dictate where she lives.
Because you're going to have pollution anywhere you go. I mean, you choose, and you can choose how to adapt your life to that. And that's what I've been taught, and that's what I'm teaching him, is that you adapt. You don't let anything control you.
This issue is likely to take center stage at the State House, as lawmakers plan to, once again, revisit the possibility of repealing Ohio's efficient and renewable energy mandates. Andy Chow, at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for dropping in on us this morning. Well, I think we can all agree that the news hits us all pretty hard and heavy sometimes, and it's always nice to just take a break, kick back, and listen to a little music. On WISO, you can find it in a jewel case, somewhere around the fringe, behind the groove. You can also get your fill of music at this year's community concert. It's coming up September 10th at Riverscape Metro Park. This year, the event features music from the Claudettes, Zane and the Sway, and this band, the Almighty Get Down. Let's wrap up today's WISO Weekend with a tune from them called She's a Witch. We'll be right back. The Almighty Get Down from their 2015 self-titled album. They are just one of our guests at the WISO Community Concert on September 10th at Riverscape Metro Park. We'll preview some more music next week on WISO Weekend. And WISO Music Director Nikki Dakota will be here to fill us in on some additional details, which you can also find now at WISO.org.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the fourth week of late summer, the first full week of the cricket and the katydid moon. In matters of global economics, the concepts of millions and billions and trillions seem disconnected from day-to-day budgeting. Who knows, I wonder, what all those zeros really mean. As I watch the season progress, I realize that my sense of numbers in the world around me is equally as confused. In the middle of May, the 100 days of summer feel like a zillion days to me. My body senses a limitless promise in that span of time. When I've just emerged from winter, I refuse to imagine the return of cold and snow. The magnitude of the new warmth and the benevolence of green leaves twist my sense of time, and I instinctively multiply the 100 days of summer by 1,000 or by 10,000, and I simply dismiss the idea that all those days could ever be used up. Then, halfway through the summer, the mathematics of self-deception fails me. Only half of the days of the season are gone, but the veil of June magic has gone too. The possibility that frost could arrive in 6 or 7 weeks suddenly makes sense. Winter suddenly makes sense too. Somewhere in middle summer, around the time cicadas start to sing, the illusion of the indeterminate 100 days unravels. At some point between the number 99 and the number 50, innocence is lost, self-deception revealed, and counting becomes an exercise then in measuring the fragility of summer. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the fifth week of late summer. In the meantime, it's almost fall. Make every number count.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WISO.org.
That's it for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. I'm Jerry Kenney. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Coming up next on WISO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.